available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, David and I, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. We got a couple weeks left of Pac-12 football, David.
Who knew?
It's like savor it, like that last bite of dessert. You just want to savor every morsel. Get the little hot fudge that's on the side of the plate and like scoop it up in there. Make that last little bit of ice cream with the cake and so good. Couple weeks left of Pac-12 football and then poof, it's gone.
Gone forever. And we will go out with the grace note of Notre Dame on the Pac-12 Network.
How freaking awesome is that?
So good. We'll go out with...
Can you imagine Notre Dame fans going, what? How do I get the Pac-12 Network?
Last ever Pac-12 After Dark has real Pac-12 After Dark potential. UCLA Cal on ESPN at 7:30 on November 25th.
Yeah.
There's lots of excitement round in the corners here.
There's
into
a lot.
Into the final stretch.
But I'm really excited for this show.
Really?
Week 11 recap.
I've never been excited to record this
show. We're back on YouTube, so if you're watching us live on our YouTube channel over at Pac-12 Podcast.
Yeah, Ryan isn't sword fishing today.
Not sword fishing. Thank you so much. We appreciate that. Yeah, we are live over there. If you have a question for us, you can put question and put in the chat
box.
Stop
the show.
Wait, what happened?
Robert Corville, he has dropped in a super chat.
Oh, crap. All right, I'll put it up here.
$9.99. Let's get the compliments going early. Robert is twice as handsome as West Texas Mike, twice as intelligent, twice the paragon of virtue of West Texas Mike. Truly a gentleman and a scholar whose good looks are only exceeded by his generosity.
Yeah, love it. Thank you, Robert, for that. That was really nice for you to do that. So, yeah, if you happen to watch on YouTube Live and you want to leave us a super chat, appreciate that very much, but you can put questions in there, comments while we're talking, and we'll try to look over there and put funny comments up on the screen for everyone to see. We're, of course, going to recap all of the Week 11 action, but we got some news on the athletic director front. David's picks, by the way, have been in fuego. He's 10-2.
On fire.
The last 2 weeks. Now, there's some miracles that have happened, and we'll kind of talk about that.
It's a Carl Durrell 2005 10-2 I've been over the last 2 weeks.
You know, it's like, yeah.
It can't continue.
Okay, the way it's going. Another 3-3 week for me, which I start off pretty good, and then it kind of fell off there. But I do all my picks over at my bookie, so I keep doing them every week. Keep thinking I'm going to like break through I'll take 50%, but Dave is just crushing it right now. He needs to get over there too.
Ryan, you are doing slightly better than Chip Kelly right now, just an FYI.
That's good. Yeah.
But I don't mean to interrupt you. Please continue.
No, that's okay. Because when your money's on the line, choose a trusted sports book that gives you the tools to win. Like MyBookie, it doesn't matter if your team is up or down. You can easily cash out or bet the game live to come out on the winning side. If you use the MyBookie daily odds boost, same game parlays, and you can take advantage of the huge prize pool contests they offer over at MyBookie. Plus, there is a no strings attached cash bonus. So that means you can get in there, let your deposit work, and you can withdraw after you win very quickly. What you need to do is use the promo code PAC12. It's going to continue as long as MyBookie is with us. We're going to keep PAC12 no matter what. Your first deposit, you can get up to $200 in cash, which you can bet, you can take, whatever you want to do. The promo code PAC12 to claim your cash bonus now. So make sure You get over to MyBookie. We only got a couple weeks left of Pac-12 football and then the bowls and all that. So get in there now. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie.
That was gorgeous.
Thanks.
That was gorgeous. That was the work of a man who is five games over 500 in his picks.
Which is okay.
I mean, honestly, if we're judging it against obvious, very high-quality head coach Chip Kelly, that's five games better than him.
Than Chip.
I mean, think about that. You should be getting paid $5 million a year to do this.
That'd be great.
Honestly.
I mean, for this podcast, to be paid anything is good. But, you know, whatever. That's fine. We get some, you know. Well, we do have, before we get into all that stuff, Dave, we have some, that's breaking news. And it has to deal with
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Pour one out for a real one.
Yeah, I don't think I have a picture of him up here. Maybe I'll grab one as you wax poetically about his illustrious 10-year tenure as the athletic director of Arizona State.
Ray Anderson has retired, announced his retirement, something like that.
Yeah. We call that forced.
Things I learned from this, the only thing that I learned from this is that he's 69 years old.
That is weird.
I had no idea he was that old. Anyway, beyond that, long time coming. Should have been fired long time ago. Very bad AD.
Wait, why? Why? Wasn't he a former sports agent?
Yeah. A former sports agent who hired his client.
Did he hire like a highly successful NFL head coach to run a college program who's older than him or similar?
Yes. Yes, he did.
Are you okay?
This is one of those that, like, I have no dog in the fight whatsoever, and it's just actually frustrating that he was there for that long. Like, I feel so bad for ASU fans that they had to deal with this and that they don't even get the joy of him getting, like, shown out on his ass. Like, it has to be, like, this resignation, retirement bullshit. Like,
yeah,
he should be fired. Like, he should have been fired a long time ago.
Like shot into the sun out of a cannon, fired.
Yes.
Like gloriously fired.
Yes.
You hired Herm Edwards, your former client. Right. We're shooting you into the sun.
So, ASU is in an interesting spot. They've got a first-year head football coach who has clearly shown signs that he knows what he's doing, at the very least. They've got their basketball situation, not worth getting into on this show. But the new AD is like, he's not going to have a football hire to make, but they do have to, you know, this is an opportunity for them to get really right on fundraising in this modern era, really right on NIL in this modern era. I mean, ASU is in a really interesting spot going into a new league with a coach that I think, I don't know, I can't speak for all ASU people, but certainly seems like he knows what he's doing.
People are excited about him.
Yeah. So I think they're in a really encouraging spot, but you got to nail this hire. Got to get somebody who's not going to be an impediment to what Dillingham is doing and is going to help accentuate his strengths as a schemer, play caller, you know, dedicated football psychopath, with all of the fundraising apparatus behind him. So really good spot for ASU to be in, but they do have to nail this.
Yeah.
And what better man for the job than Michael Crow?
Yeah, he's another one that's he kept the continuity of the Pac-12 conference because you don't want to like switch commissioners all the time just because a guy screws up a little bit. So, you know, kudos to Michael Crow for making sure that Larry Scott stayed around as long as he did.
West Texas Mike has dropped another $5 in the super chat.
Let me pull that up here.
I mean, West Texas Mike, you know it all already. You are just as handsome, just as intelligent, just as witty, just as charming.
His paragon of virtue level exactly the same.
Exactly
as
the same, but like not diminishing in any way.
Okay,
It's additive. Honestly, today you being the same paragon of virtue makes you even more of a paragon of virtue because that level of consistency from week to week, day to day, is truly what we're all striving for. Be the same guy to everyone every day, and you just happen to be a man of such noble virtue that it's like a bright light shining on all of us.
We do have lights on.
Yeah.
You want to see what it looks like in here in the studio? Oop, what happened there?
Mm.
So you can see the lights in there. I'm showing if you guys are watching. Yeah. So we had that little bit of news. Chris Cartman all over it. So nice job over there at Sun Devil Source. Make sure you go check it out. You also mentioned the other funny piece of news, that Notre Dame Stanford game. Like, I just love that. I just love the fact that these...
We're going to get maybe the most storied program in college football history on the Pac-12 network for its final day of football existence.
Yes.
It's gorgeous.
It is. I mean, I need to give credit whoever tweeted that to me. Someone tweeted it to me. And
it was like, our friend Matthew.
It was Matthew? Oh, very good. I love that. Matthew. Speaking of Matthew, we do have the final survivor pool results are in, and we have a four-way tie because everybody has Stanford left.
And because some interesting shit happened. Arizona State beat UCLA as a 17-point dog. Otherwise, we would not have had a four-way tie.
True.
Yeah.
That eliminated some people. Did he mention who got eliminated?
No, that didn't eliminate some people. That kept people in.
Oh, okay. ASU, right. Okay, because you had to pick ASU.
Right.
That's what you were down to. Okay. So he said it's over. Four remaining players won their games, two at Arizona, one at Arizona State, and one picked Cal. So all those teams won. Arizona obviously had a better chance than the other two. Everyone has Stanford left. So he says, I guess avoiding Stanford at all costs was a winning strategy. Congrats to Sam. Jake Howell, Jutton P, and Colt Bush. So those are the guys that won.
Colt Bush, he is, if I remember correctly, a super chat giver.
Oh.
He giveth and he receiveth.
Wait, have the other guys super chatted? Should Colt just be the winner then?
Yeah, maybe that's true. Maybe we just name Colt the winner.
Yeah, screw this.
It's arbitrary. There are no rules.
So of the 355 players, 230 were eliminated by making the wrong pick. 116 failed to make a pick, and 5 made a duplicate pick. Of the 230 that got the wrong pick, 185, which is over 80%, were directly due to Stanford picking him to win against Sacramento State, picking Colorado, or picking Colorado and Washington State to beat them. I was a victim of that, the Colorado one. So Stanford was involved in the elimination of almost everybody, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Okay, as a reminder, the entry form stated that the prize for winning was guaranteed to be among the following. And so the prize choices are your choice of which conference your favorite team will play in next year, your choice of which conference your least favorite team will play in next year, a free subscription to watch USC Pac-12 network games on DirecTV, 2 50-yard line tickets to the 2023 Herm Edwards Bowl Classic. Warning, may be canceled. Too late for you to change your plans. 2 50-yard line tickets to see UCLA in the 2023 Holiday Bowl. Warning, will definitely be canceled, too late for you to change your plans. A guest appearance on Ryan and Dave's brand new weekly podcast, Deep Dive, on Rutgers Athletics, or is it Indiana? Either way, it'll be scintillating. A cheerful discussion with Dave about his fourth favorite president, a player who both begins and ends his career at Colorado, a six and three UCLA victory over Illinois in 2024, and congratulations from Ryan and Dave. Until next season, Matthew from Mountain View.
So we were talking about this, what we think you all should do, the four of you that we have named here as the tied people, is you will pick the winner of Stanford Cal this weekend, and along with your winner, you will provide us with the total score for the game. How many total points will be scored between Cal and Stanford in that game? You will provide this information via email to Pac12podcast@gmail.com. You will do so no later than, Saturday morning?
Yeah, Saturday morning sounds good. Should we have him send it to
Matthew? Just do it before the game. It doesn't really matter.
Should we get Matthew involved? No, just send it to us. Send it to us. Tell us the winner, Cal Stanford. You don't have to pick Stanford just because that was the only team you have left. We're going to give you the choice, but you got the game is involving Stanford. So Cal Stanford and the total number of points, not the margin of victory, total points.
Right.
And the closest, if you guys all pick the same or whoever gets the game right, then we will go to the score.
And if that is somehow correct, then we will fold this into next week's competition, and it will most likely be about Stanford Notre Dame.
Yeah. Astro Wave says, us Sun Devil fans are finally free of Ray Anderson. Yes, I think everyone... Is there anyone, like, upset?
And no.
No. That's kind of funny. You wanted the glorious, like... Just, you know, the ending, you wanted it to end. You didn't want it like a Sopranos ending. You wanted like an ending to this. It was just like amazing where like Ray Anderson's gone, you know, and we didn't get it. You know, you get the resignation. USC's last two athletic directors that were fired, it might have even been Pat Hayden too. Like Lynn Swann, it was basically like a statement from the president. We never heard from him. There wasn't a statement from Lynn Swann at all. It was just like, all right, he's gone. We're moving on. And Mike Bone, because of the controversy, we didn't hear from him either. So the last two USC ADs just sort of were like, we were notified that they're no longer there and never heard from again. It's weird. Pat Hayden, we haven't heard from since, haven't seen him around. You're like, an AD, you're not doing a great job. You just kind of get, you're just gone. Just like, bye-bye, and just like sort of close the book and move on. You don't even hear from him again. So
yeah,
we got a statement from Ray Anderson at least.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. So we have to do our
Pac-12 roundup.
We got our new Pac-12 power rankings, which kind of the same as last week. Didn't really change that much. But we'll go over these games. So first one, we're back down at number 12.
Stanford Cardinal.
And way up at number 4, we got...
Oregon State Beavers.
Yeah. Stanford went runny dog shit against Oregon State. Oregon State scored 62 points in this football game. They won 62-17. It was bad from the beginning. It continued to be very bad. Basically, the only thing that changed is that Oregon State got a little bit more efficient scoring after like the first quarter.
Yeah.
But it was a blowout beatdown very quickly. Yeah. I mean, look, has Stanford shown a little bit more than we thought they would this year? Yeah. But are they a good team by any reasonable definition of the word? No. Definitely not. And Oregon State's a different and probably much better team at home than they are on the road. So that added up to what it was. Now Oregon State, I mean, we'll get into this week, but they've got their two-game gauntlet to end the year, Washington and Oregon back-to-back. Whereas Stanford, you know, probably has another chance for a maybe win this weekend against Cal. But even if they finish 3-9, it feels like a borderline successful 3-9 for Troy Taylor. Like, feels like, okay. You know, you at least showed a pulse with a roster that is significantly depleted, doesn't really have a lot of talent. I'd be okay with that. But yeah, Ashton Daniels threw 3 picks. They moved the ball actually okay, I guess, but couldn't defend anything. And Oregon State, if they hadn't had to kneel out at the end, they would have had over 600 yards on the day.
That's a lot of yards.
Especially in today's era of... the clock running on running on first downs. That's a lot. I mean, on 68 plays to get almost 600 yards is pretty
bad.
Pretty bad.
Stanford was a 20-point dog. Mm. We both were on the right side of this, mm-hmm. Taking Oregon State, thinking it's going to be, hey, it's Oregon State at home, it's going to be a blowout. I don't know if I've ever seen a team score 62 and only convert 2 third downs. Like, there were 2 of 7 on third downs. Mm-hmm. They got the red zone 5 times, 5 touchdowns. Didn't turn the ball over. Stanford turned it over 4 times. Almost double the yardage of Stanford. For Oregon State, it's the most points and largest margin of victory in a conference game since 2012 against another Bay Area team where they beat Cal 62-14. So a little bit better. Damian Martinez, he found the end zone 4 times. Pretty good. Jamar Jefferson did that in 2018 against Washington State. That's the last time Abiv did that. And it's the most points allowed for Stanford since 2002, where they gave up 65 at Arizona State. So I don't know. DJ, you only had to throw 19 passes. I just can't get over the fact that they had 2 third down conversions because they just didn't need a lot of third. counts.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy. We've seen Stanford have a pulse, but going to Corvallis isn't the place to get a pulse.
No.
This is a
monumental beatdown.
It was so bad that you had to instantly put them at 12 after this.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. So, sorry, Stanford. That didn't go very well, but...
No, and I don't want to talk about that FCS game anymore.
The FCS game? Okay. Let's see. Next up, we have our number 11 team.
Washington State Cougars.
And they were in the Bay Area taking on... Where do we have them? Our number 10 team.
California Golden Bears.
This is when you know things have gone bad. Cal won 42-39. It's when you absolutely positively outplay your opponent, but you still lose, which is what happened to Washington State in this game. They had some horrendous turnovers luck. They had two fumble returns for touchdowns against them. Two. And then they had another fumble that they fumbled on like their own 20, I think, that Cal immediately punched in. Cal didn't really play that well, and they weren't that good offensively.
Right.
Like, scoring 42 points is insane, given what they were doing offensively. But it was more just Washington State couldn't stop shooting itself in the foot. Aside from shooting themselves in the foot, it actually looked like they'd worked some things out. Like, offensively, Cam Ward, when he wasn't fumbling the ball, was pretty good. They actually ran the ball okay, sort of, for the first time in forever. But just... absolute gong show stuff going on with turnovers. For Cal, I mean, Fernando Mendoza was fine. Jaden Ott was really good. He got hurt a little bit towards the end. I think he was kind of dealing with something throughout, but he got hurt a little bit at the end. They eventually won and covered. The final line was like Cal -2.5. I think we had it at 1.5. So they just barely covered, but they did, the Bears. And did you have Washington State? I can't remember. Did we pick differently on this one? I can't remember if this
that
was.
That was, let me see.
We might have both had Cal on this one.
We both had Cal. Yeah, we both got this one right. We had it at 1.5.
Yeah, but honestly, Washington State should have won this game. Like, if you were like looking for signs of life from the Cougars, this was that. But when things are going bad, when things are cascading against you, it's kind of just... you'll have bad luck games where you lose too. In addition to all the games where they should have lost, this is one they probably should have won and still lost.
Yeah. Was happy to get this one right. But if you watch the game, it wasn't like you said. I mean, just look at some of the numbers. It's crazy. Washington State had 483 yards. And
you gave them the mean growl. Why did you give them the mean growl?
I didn't realize that.
Washington State Cougars.
There.
There you go. Okay. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. No, a lot of people are getting...
they didn't like that.
Yeah.
My apologies. 327 yards of offense for Cal. Four turnovers was really a killer. Washington State did miss a field goal. Every time Cal got in the red zone, they got a touchdown, so that certainly helped. Three fumble recoveries, like you mentioned, and for three fumble recoveries for touchdowns, two defensive... and one was a recovery of their own fumble. So that's nuts. It's the fourth game for Cal scoring 40-plus points this year. They haven't done that since 2016. And then Cade Ulave, he's the first Cal player since Nick Forbes in 2012 against Washington that had multiple fumble recoveries in the same game. So obviously the turnovers were a big deal here. I keep getting Cal sort of wrong. Like, I had him against USC and stuff, but you see, like, the offense, you feel like they're going to play well, and when I think they're going to play well, they don't. Like, Jay Knott had 167 yards, you know, and a touchdown, but they just weren't the same. You know, Washington State was reeling. Cal looked like they had some life, and Washington State comes in and plays better. You know, like, these are very Jekyll and Hyde teams, and you're just not sure what the – but the weird thing is, like – the bad Cal showed up and like the better Washington State showed up and it still didn't matter. The Cal still won, which is just so weird. Like, it's hard to find consistency with some of these teams.
PSA, this is how Ryan sounds with a game that he picked correctly.
No, this is, yeah. Like, It didn't make sense. Like, I shouldn't have got this one right. Like,
yeah.
But I got some really bad luck and other stuff. But, like, this was just one where I didn't get – I thought Cal would be – oh, I think Cal's going to be better. They suck. And you're like, oh, I don't think Cal's going to be good. They're great. I mean, Washington State, I've picked them. And I picked Washington State when they just absolutely tank and don't show up. And you're like, what? But, you know, they pick a road game and they actually show up for this one. So you kind of feel bad, but – I don't know. Like, I mean, Cam Ward threw the ball 60 times. Like, how crazy is that?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a weird one. It's hard to judge because knowing that Washington State doesn't know their fate, their future. Now, it's not affecting Oregon State as much, but man, it is. And Washington State beat Oregon State this year. Like, it's just so weird, Pac-12.
Yep.
Okay. But someone said in the chat, Kyle, talk about the Apple Cup. Washington State will not beat Washington. What we've seen from Washington State the last few weeks, certainly true. But if they just played a cleaner game like they did against Cal, I would give them – I think Washington's going to win. But if they play like they played on Saturday, Dave, like the Apple Cup could be a lot more exciting than we originally thought, right? Or not really.
I mean, potentially. If Cam Ward has indeed pulled his head out, but I don't know how much of that is just going against Cal. I mean, Cal sucks.
Okay.
But we'll see. No, I would not pick them to be competitive against Washington at this point.
Grant says so much airtime for a crappy game.
Yeah, geez, man.
Sorry. It's just, you know, we talk about games. Okay. Next up, we have, let's see. So that was the Washington State one. This was a fun one to talk about. We have number 9.
Colorado Buffaloes.
And number 3.
Arizona Wildcats.
Yeah, so Arizona went on the road in, I think what we identified pregame as kind of a potential letdown spot. Coming as it did between big win over UCLA after that big streak of ranked games they were playing. Then you get this one, and then it's Utah at home that you're hosting the next week. You've just gotten to bowl eligibility. A lot of opportunity to not be as focused, to not come out as good. And in large part, that's how this played out. Like, this game played out in such a way that you could see Arizona not being quite as energized, not quite being as enthused, not quite being as locked in with their game plan. And it allowed Colorado to hang around for a long part of this game. I mean, it was 24-17 Colorado at halftime. Arizona had to dig deep in this one to come out with the win, win 34-31. This is the one game I got wrong. We both got it wrong. I got it right.
Yeah.
You got it right. I got this one wrong. But Arizona did eventually win 34-31. It did require a Colorado missed field goal to send this one into the books with a Arizona win. But it also required Tyler Loop hitting a field goal to ice the game at the end. This was a really good game. It was a lot of fun to watch. I thought Noah Fifita, who didn't play great, I think, in the first half, showed up in the second half. Played a much better, much cleaner game. Tetero McMillan continues to be the best, one of the top three or so receivers in the league this year.
Has to be.
And I know Washington's got its guys, USC's got its guys, the whole thing, but he's been exceptional this year. He's definitely in that conversation for the top tier in the league. You know, Jed Fish did the smart thing at the end of this game. They could have tried to punch it in. Instead, they worked the clock to set it up as the game-winning field goal. And when you've got a field goal kicker as good as Tyler Loop is, you can do that. We've seen a lot of shaky kicking games in the league this year. Arizona doesn't have one. They've got a really good kicker, and he knocked it through, and they won.
Yeah, this was the morning game, 11 a.m. on Pac-12 Network. I took Colorado plus 10.5, thought they'd keep it close. Didn't realize that they were going to potentially win. I mean, they were winning this game going into the fourth quarter. Arizona outscores them 10-0 in that quarter. Kind of clean game, though. No turnovers. Colorado did have a lot of penalties. I think they had 11 penalties in the game. That was, you know, fourth.
That's kind of been their story this year.
Yeah, fourth game this season with at least 10. You know, neither team was, like, great on third down. A lot of touchdowns in the red zone. I think 9 total trips, 8 touchdowns and 1 field goal. You know, there was only one lead change, and that's when Arizona took the lead. And they had 4 different ties in this game. Yeah, I don't know. This Colorado had this one. And I'm not saying they were in control, but this was definitely a winnable game. And then it just sort of like kind of unraveled a little bit at the end. But I like the way Colorado came out and fought. You know, they won the first quarter, dead even the second, dead even the third. But then they couldn't get over in the fourth quarter.
Can I give you a stat?
Sure, go ahead.
Jonah Coleman had 179 yards. That's a pretty good day, right?
Yeah.
On 11 carries. He averaged 16.3 yards per carry.
Yeah.
You know, I joked earlier in the year because there was a broadcast, I forget which game it was, where they kept talking about Jonah Coleman because he'd mentioned pregame one of his like kind of guys he likened himself after that he tried to look up to was Maurice Jones-Drew. And they kept talking about him. Oh, he's like Maurice Jones-Drew. And I was like clowning on it on Twitter. I don't know, man. That guy's pretty good. Like, no, he's a tiny little dude who can run really fast and he's kind of built real stout. The comparison is not ridiculous. I'll say that. He's been really fun to watch this year and watch him grow throughout the year, or at least watch my understanding of his game grow throughout the year. Maybe would be a better way to put it. Montana Lemonius Craig also had a good game. Probably, you know, one of his first for Arizona this year.
Yeah, good to see him. I guess his old team.
Yeah. And for Colorado, yeah, I still think Deion may have broken his own offense. It looks fine, I guess, but it's I don't know. It's not quite hitting the heights it was early in the year, and I think firing your offensive coordinator midseason was maybe not the ideal move.
Maybe not smart.
Yeah.
So Coleman's 16.3 yards per carry average is the highest in the Pac-12 this year, if at least 10 carries. It's the 6th highest by a Pac-12 player in the Pac-12 era. So that's a pretty historic day.
Wait. Hang on. Jason Noland, he is just as handsome as West Texas Mike, just as charming, just as smart, just as funny, just as much a paragon of virtue. Truly one of those, just a man who hits all the like just platonic ideals. Like what I like about Jason most is his fidelity, his absolute, you know, loyalty, as a, you know, I consider him family, frankly. And he fulfills all obligations of filial piety. Truly a man, a man among men, Jason Noland.
Did you read what he said or no? Do you
remember? Oh, thanks for helping fill an afternoon void, fellas. Good stuff. Go Beavs.
Nice. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the super chat there. Yeah. So, ranked team gets a win. It was close. Colorado kept it close, like I thought they would at home. So got that one. We're going to move on to the next game. These teams are right next to each other. We got number 8.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
And I assume they lost because they are behind number 7.
UCLA Bruins.
Yeah, let's just reverse that. That's stupid. It's number 8 UCLA losing to number 7 Arizona State. Yeah, so this game was almost like, really, for the dichotomies it displayed, for the poetic nature of it, was one of my favorite games of the day. Because on one side, you had Kenny Dillingham, avowed psychopath, we've talked about this, but doing literally everything possible to win this game. Like installing a complete joke of an offense that he knew would look ridiculous, that his team knew would look ridiculous, that would make him like laughable if it didn't work out. Installing that thing because he recognized that UCLA's one true disadvantage, the one true advantage they would have over no matter what ASU did, was their defensive line versus his offensive line. And he put in a friggin' swinging gate for like 15 plays to keep that from being an advantage, to basically get his playmakers in space against UCLA's corners and linebackers.
If you didn't see this, so describe it like...
Okay, so...
Like 3 linemen.
Yeah, basically you put a bunch of your linemen over to one side. You put a bunch of your skill players over to one side. You might have them mixed up in little bits. And then you might have 1 or 2 blockers of sorts in front of the quarterback. They could be skill guys. They could be linemen. They could be anything. And it's just the design is to completely confuse, but also spread out a defense so they can't just overwhelm your offensive line and put your quarterback under fire. It's also a thing that works until it doesn't, and until a defense starts to get aggressive against it and might try to blow up the quarterback over and over again. He didn't run it much in the second half at all. This was a first half, we're going to catch him off guard, we're going to do some weird stuff, and then we're going to dial it back quite a bit. It was so smart, and it was essentially eking out every possible advantage he could get from his players, acknowledging their deficiencies, acknowledging that Trenton Bourget was on one ankle, acknowledging that he didn't really have a backup quarterback who could play. He decided to play Jalen Conyers and Cameron Scataboo at quarterback on each of them at least half a dozen snaps. And each of those guys threw the ball on like designed throws. You had all of that where it was all designed to take advantage of where they had comparative advantages with their skill guys versus UCLA's back seven and mitigate the weaknesses. On the other side, you had Chip Kelly, who had a third string quarterback of his own, Colin Schley. Now, Colin Schley can't throw a football. He can throw it really hard. You just don't know where it's going. On a game like this, where you've got maybe the guy who's innovated the most impressive rushing offense in modern college football, Chip Kelly, like the innovator of how to use modern option attack, you have him, and he's got a running quarterback, a quarterback who can run the ball really well and can run all that option stuff, but can't really throw. And what does he do? He drops him back intentionally 21 times in this game out of 58 plays. Just
on purpose.
Not trying to win the game. Trying to do something else entirely has nothing to do with installing a game plan to win. You've got a coach who's caring, who gives a shit, who's running a game plan to innovate, to try to eke out whatever advantage he can. And the other one is trying to prove a point to somebody who criticized him 7 years ago. Who knows? I don't know. It doesn't matter. But he's not designing a game plan to win the game in front of him. And so that's what you ended up with. You ended up with Arizona State winning the game 17-7. Arizona State does not have good talent. They've got Elijah Badger, who's really good. They've got Jalen Conyers, who's really good. Quarterback's not great, especially when he's on one ankle. Cameron Scataboo is pretty good. Yeah. Their offensive line is completely depleted, and it did not matter because their coach cared, and they designed a game plan to win the game. UCLA's got better talent on their defense than Arizona State has on their offense. UCLA might have better talent on its offense than Arizona State has on its defense. It didn't matter because Arizona State designed a game plan to win the game. On top of that, UCLA was faced with three different critical fourth down where they were fourth and one or fourth and two. And each time they ran the same damn play, just run the ball straight into the line of scrimmage. And Arizona State had clearly scouted that that's what Chip Kelly likes to do on fourth downs. He doesn't get creative. It's just pound the ball up the middle. And they had that scouted out and they just flat beat UCLA on those. And that's such a great example of a staff that scouts incisively and a staff that doesn't self-scout at all. And so you ended up with UCLA getting stopped on fourth down all of the four times it tried and three times on fourth and short, and twice was in the red zone. So it was a complete coaching failure, and that was why this game I thought was so beautiful and what it demonstrated, I think, about the Chip Kelly era. It's why this is obviously nail in the coffin type stuff for Chip Kelly. Just a complete demonstration of where he has failed as UCLA's head coach.
So,
extension.
No, this was terrible. I mean, when you got this one right, you finally picked the UCLA game right, right? Or no, did you do it last week too? Did you get?
I've picked the last two correctly.
Okay, yeah. I thought UCLA would come out and play well at home. I did think that one of the two starting UCLA quarterbacks would play and not Colin Schley. Was that sort of a late thing? We didn't. I didn't realize Bourget. I thought Bourget was out and UCLA was going to have one of their top two guys.
Word was starting to trickle out of Cartman's site. Chris Cartman does a great job. Sun Devil Source. Sign up. Especially if you want the inside scoop on the AD search. They had it Thursday. I think it might have been after we recorded.
Okay.
They had it Thursday that Bourget was going to give it a go. UCLA, I was banking on Schley most of the week because Garbers was really limping and Dante Moore had to my eye, suffered some sort of head injury and most likely a concussive injury against Arizona. So I was anticipating Schley, and UCLA should have been anticipating Schley. They should have been designing a game plan for Schley. And instead we saw so there was a scripted 6 runs to begin the game for UCLA. After that, there were 52 more plays in the game, and let me get this correct. Of those 52 plays, 24 of them were designed dropbacks.
Yeah.
On a day where you have Colin Schley as your starting quarterback, what is the purpose of that balance? It wasn't as if ASU was doing a good job against UCLA's running game. They were not.
Yeah.
Aside from those short yardage runs, which obviously those count, but aside from those short yardage runs, I mean, UCLA, even with those short yardage runs, if you account for sacks, they averaged over 6 yards per carry. Like, if you take away the sacks, it's which any NFL's, yeah, they ran the ball really well. They just didn't do it enough.
Yeah.
And that's, again, they didn't design a game plan to win the game. They designed a game plan to show off Chip Kelly's ability to play around with formations or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Once I saw the beginning where, oh, crap, Borgay is playing and Schley is playing, then I'm like, okay, well, there's no way UCLA is going to cover the 17. But they still could have won the game. Like, the way you put it was great. It's just Kenny Dillingham comes up with a plan where whatever we got to do, Pop Warner stuff, we're going to figure this out and give ourselves the best chance to win. And I feel like we see this a lot. Like, sometimes you got to go try to win a game and you might get blown out because you did some stuff that's a little crazy. And this was one where you do some weird stuff that's crazy and it ends up working. And it does look bad on the UCLA side because you had opportunities to do some crazy stuff. When I've seen Schley run the ball, like, it looks great. Like, he's fat. Like,
he's super fast.
It's like, okay, like, you could have done some fun stuff.
Yeah, he's fast. He's shifty. But, like, there's so much of it. UCLA has offensive line issues. They're not injury related. They're talent related. But they have offensive line issues. They have a lot of trouble blocking up defenses. But Kenny Dillingham is the one running swinging gate.
Yeah.
Chip Kelly's supposed to be this like historian of football. He knows all of it. He knows everything that you could possibly do. It's like the Bill Belichick thing that you're hoping to get. Why aren't you running some swinging gate? Like, what happened to that? You were doing that a couple of years ago. Why aren't you doing it now?
Yeah. Like the 2-point conversion stuff or whatever.
Yeah. Like, what's going on? But it's more than that. Like, okay, they've got quarterback health issues. So they're doing wild stuff. They've got their running back taking snaps. They've got their tight end taking snaps. Do you know who UCLA has at running back? Colson Yankoff. Do you know what he was coming out of high school?
A quarterback.
Jalen Conyers was a tight end coming out of high school, even though he played quarterback. Cameron Scadabo was a running back out of high school, even though he played, I guess, some quarterback.
Yeah.
Also, side note, he's got a gun. Did you see his touchdown throw?
That was the first Arizona State running back to throw a touchdown pass since Kalen Ballage did in 2016.
He's got a rifle. Like, he and Schley both have like rocket arms. Anyway, you got Colson Yankoff, who was a quarterback coming out of high school. He has never thrown a pass at UCLA. What's the point? Like, what is the point of all this? It's not fun. It's not interesting. Like, is this really cool stuff to go over in clinics in the offseason? I have no idea, but it's not interesting. And that's maybe like the death blow for any of this stuff. If you're going to be an offensive innovator, either be really good or be interesting.
Yeah.
And it's neither.
Only one turnover for each team, 9 penalties for UCLA. So that's not going to help when your offense isn't going. We do have an interesting comment from Aria. And I feel like this is, you know, makes a lot of sense. Extension for Chip before he goes on a run, and UCLA can't afford him.
Sorry, guys. I don't think it's going to happen.
So, I mean, I think if you're going to try to be financially, fiscally sound in your decision making,
obviously 10 more years.
Yeah, you got to like lock them up at the going rate because it's only going to go up. So,
yeah, I mean, inflation, but also just his own quality as a head coach. Like, clearly, he has on the market, on the open market. Wow, Chip Kelly could be making $60 million a year.
Yet another Duck fan says the guy most likely. The guy two most likely outsmart Chip Kelly is always on the sidelines of UCLA games. His name is Chip Kelly.
Abso-friggin-lutely.
Okay. So really bad. Like, one of the – like, the Colorado loss to Stanford's really bad.
This was beautiful. No, this was –
this has got to be one of the –
this was one of those you all have seen it. I mean, if you've been following your own team long enough, you know what the cathartic loss looks like. This was the cathartic loss. Like, it made everything just so clear. Arizona was clarifying, but this was just, I think everyone watching came away with the exact same impression, which is, oh, this is over. This can't continue.
But this is one of the worst losses in the Pac-12, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Losing at home to a 2-7 ASU team. Yeah.
Their first road win since they won at Colorado last year. Fewest points allowed they've had in a conference game since when they beat 70-7. They beat Arizona in the Territorial Cup. Like, it's just – Arizona State wasn't very good. They weren't getting wins.
They lost 55-3 the previous week.
Yeah.
They gave up 55 points to Utah. And do we all remember Utah? I know it's hard, but do we all remember watching them say this week – They're depleted on offense. They've got a pig farmer at quarterback. They don't have their tight ends. They don't have, I mean, it's just, they don't have like three of their running backs they intended at the beginning of the year. And they gave up 55 points to that team. And they gave up 7 to UCLA.
Yeah.
An offensive guru.
This one bums me out. I mean, it wasn't even close to covering it. But the fact that they weren't even in it, you know, for ASU to just get boat raced like that the week before. You're like, okay, they're going to like pack it in. They didn't.
No.
They did not pack it in. UCLA looked like they packed it in. So, I mean, that's kind of the thing of the week-to-week thing. It's a whole different team from week to week. Utah gets smoked at home. They smoke ASU. ASU bounces back. UCLA, it's just a lot of that going on. Okay. Our number six team.
USC Trojans.
They were up in Eugene, where I was up there, David, taking on our number one team.
Oregon Ducks.
Really just a close game the whole way through. There was nothing backdoor about this cover. Oregon won 36-27, but it was neck and neck the whole way.
Yes, I mean, USC got the backdoor cover again. Another backdoor cover.
There was just a lot of stupid crap that needed to happen for Oregon to not blow out USC in this game, because it felt like in the first half, this should be a blowout. How is it not a blowout right now? It should be a blowout, but instead it was, 22-14 at halftime?
This is the kind of stuff that's going on. You're like, wait, what? No, I'm watching the game. Oregon had one drive that went less than 48 yards.
Oregon, like, okay.
That was a touchdown.
All right, how about this? Oregon had 552 yards on 63 plays, right? USC had 379 yards on 60 plays. So on a very similar number of plays, they had 150 fewer yards. This should have been like a 21-point blowout. Like, yeah, it should
Oregon
have
didn't even turn the ball over.
Yeah, they should have covered a long, long way.
Yes.
They
did not.
But they didn't.
Yes. And you got the win, and I did not. And it's
But the funny part was, we were sitting and debating.
I feel like the pick was right.
Yeah, we were debating. Because
if you watch this game, you go like, yeah, I would have taken Oregon. Like, if you knew, you didn't know the score, you just watch the whole game. You're like, yeah, give me Oregon plus 15 and a half. Wait, what, they only won by 9?
It was 36-21 in the fourth quarter, and I was texting Ryan. I'm like, oh, it's a. Oregon missed a field goal or something?
They missed a field goal. Yeah. They would have been up by 18.
I was texting you and I'm like, hey, that was a tough one for you. That was a tough miss. And you're like, no, I had 15. And I'm like, oh, no. Sadly, on our podcast, it was 15 and a half. You missed the half point. And then it didn't matter.
Then, yeah, USC scored a garbage touchdown.
Just absolute garbage. Absolute
trash.
But
like, we do our picks every week. So I text Dave like, hey, what's the spread? 15. Okay. So I tell all my staff we're picking 15. And then you put in 15 and a half in the doc, which was so funny because it was like the really half point's going to, it didn't matter because Oregon.
It almost mattered.
Funny. Yeah.
I mean, I thought Oregon pretty much controlled the game. I would say if you're looking for like signs of optimism for USC, there really weren't many. I don't know. Like defensively, not really. They gave up a bunch of explosive plays again.
Oregon had four drives that went over 80 yards.
Did your linebacker Mason Cobb really say that he didn't watch film of the previous game?
He was asked the question, yeah, but when the Washington game,
You don't just flush the film. You have to watch it.
That's what he said.
Yes. Wow. What
Lincoln Riley said afterwards, like, that's it's rare. Like, it's happened a couple of times. Sometimes it's just, like, walk away from it. I think he tried to, like, help him out a little bit. It might have just been a frustration thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I'm sure it's demotivating at some level psychologically, but also, like, to make, you know, adjustments and corrections, you probably need to watch that stuff. But anyway, I mean, I don't know how much there was to posit or take away from it, because it wasn't like it was that good of an offensive performance either. Like, Caleb Williams was fine, but I didn't think USC was very good offensively either. I don't really understand how this was a 9-point game. Like,
no.
Like, watching it live, I'm like, how are they still in this? I don't even understand.
It didn't make a ton of sense. Yeah, like, so last week against Washington, so they fire Alex Grinch. I don't think the defense really changed that much, but whatever. Washington had 10 real drives, 7 touchdowns, a field goal, 1 3 and out, and a pick, like, in the end zone. Oregon had 8 real drives because they had to kneel down the end of the half and the end of the game. They went touchdown, 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 field goal. But these were 83-yard touchdown in 2 plays, 81-yard touchdown drive in 3 plays, 75-yard touchdown drive in 13 plays. And then they started their own 1 and had an 84-yard drive that resulted in a field goal in 10 plays. They scored a touchdown out of the second half. They have 1-3 and out. And at that point, you felt like they were almost disinterested because you were up. There was 2 or 3 scores at the time. They go 3 and out and punt. So that was like the only stop that USC had. They get another touchdown drive. There was a short one after the USC turnover, 5 plays, 48 yards. And then they have a 9-play, 52-yard drive that ends up being a missed field goal. So, like, every drive went, like, their shortest drive outside the 1-3 and out was 48 yards, and that was a touchdown. So, yeah. When they got the ball, they just moved it. And there was really no resistance. That's why when you're like, how did USC get within 9 points? It doesn't make a lot of sense.
The funniest thing was so USC scores with 3:44 to go, and then they're facing a 2-point conversion. They missed the 2-point conversion, but several things.
We have a lot of 2-point conversion talk in the chat, so if you want to address that stuff.
Several things about the 2-point conversion. Okay. First, I could go either way on going for it right then.
So when you're down 9, would you kick it and then...
And then preserve your life for the next one, or do you do it then and figure out how much you know? But here's the reason why you probably just kick the extra point.
Okay.
Because dumbass Lincoln Riley had already used 2 of his 3 timeouts at that point. So you can't actually count on 2 more possessions. So you're basically, if you go for 2 there and miss it, you are saying the game is over. So you have to actually kick the extra point. If you had 3 timeouts, you could talk me into the other way. But I would, I think you still probably go for 2 because I want the information up front.
What about Landannan going for 2? Early, he did. It was 7-7. They scored in 3 plays.
Landanning's a golden god. He can do it whenever he wants to. That's fine.
They went 0-2 again. Like, I need 15.5 or whatever, and Landanning's going for 2 instead of, you know. And now they're down. They're only up 6 instead of 7, and it's like, that was just kind of happening.
Yeah. But most importantly, Lincoln had spent both of his timeouts setting up offensive plays earlier in that very same quarter. Now, it's a game where you are trailing, where you are within a couple of scores, but you're trailing.
Yeah, you can't use timeouts.
You cannot use timeouts. How is he still so bad at this? He's been a head coach for a long time, and he's not some, like, ancient Mariner idiot. Like, he's a relatively young guy who should be, like, reading these things. Like, he should understand this stuff. He shouldn't be so dyed in the wool that it's, like, impossible to adjust. But he's still making these same mistakes.
Yes.
And they're absolute categorical mistakes. You do not use your timeouts. Almost exclusively, you don't use them for any purpose other than stopping the clock at the end of half or the end of game to manage your ability to score points. That's it. Like, you want to give yourself as many opportunities to score points as possible, and that's why you have timeouts. They are not for setting up plays. If you need to set up a play, take a 5-yard penalty.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
The timeout's way more.
The 5 yards will not matter if you set up the right play. The timeout is going to matter. Stop being stupid. Anyway, going for two, I mean, they should kick the extra point at that point because they didn't have enough time.
Yeah. And Lan Danning, though, you're okay with him going for
two? Yeah, he's always great. All of his information is good. Everything he does is awesome.
So Bo Nix, his first two passes were like 75-plus yard touchdowns. He was averaging 80.5 yards of completion in the first quarter. That's pretty good. He's the second FBS quarterback on record to have each of his first two pass attempts go for completions of at least 75 yards. The other was Baylor's Jacob Zeno back in 2019. So kind of crazy. He threw for over 400 yards. He is the first Duck since Vernon Adams, remember him, in 2015, to have 400 yards, four touchdowns, and complete at least 74% of his passes, which is what he did. Troy Franklin, the first Pac-12 player ever to have at least 145 yards receiving on just two catches. So pretty crazy stuff. Yeah, again, you know, 552 yards, four trips to the red zone, four touchdowns, 50% on third down. I mean, it's just that, you know, yeah, it's just kind of crazy to see what happened with USC's defense was just bad.
West Texas Mike has an interesting point. Lincoln Riley isn't bright. He's just not bright. I wanted him to be bright, but he's not.
Oh.
I kind of agree. And I don't think you need to be super intelligent to be a football coach, but it certainly helps with the game management stuff. And I don't think he's an elaborate thinker. Like, I don't know. You got to kick the extra point there, buddy. Like, it's you've got to extend the life of the game and not put it all on. It's putting it all on one play to do what exactly? To tie the game eventually? Like, are you going to aggressively then go for two again when you get it to try to win the game? Because if then, maybe, if that's your plan.
Yeah.
But that's not your plan. You're just trying to, I don't know, give yourself a different opportunity to tie the game at the end. Just kick the extra point.
Yeah.
Moron.
Morons. Morons. Okay, we have a question from Kyle. Ryan, you saw both up close, Penix or Bo for Heisman?
I'm Penix.
I'm still with Penix on this, or Penix, if as like Dave's like to say. So those two long touchdown passes, they were both like in the teens, like 15 or 18 yards or something, and they just ran through the USC secondary. But he managed the game really well. You know, did a great job. They ran the ball okay, but like this was a throwing game for Bo Nix. But I still have, you know, he got the head-to-head already. If Oregon comes back and like blows him out or something in the Pac-12 championship game, then I think that could change. But right now, I still have Michael Penix.
Penix.
And I am a Heisman voter. But Jaden Daniels, former Pac-12 quarterback, he's got to be up there too because he's been redonkulous.
Well, because he was forged in the fires of the Pac-12.
He did. He might have had 400. He had 250 rushing yards and 400 passing yards. Some stupid. It was some crazy number. It was like beyond whatever you could imagine. Okay, and this is the one that absolutely kills me. Number five,
Utah Utes,
and number two,
Washington Huskies.
I'm not sure what you're talking about. This is a very normal game that unfolded in a very normal way with a normal score outcome. 35-28. What could be more normal than that? Well, Washington won.
Washington was favored by 9. I had Washington.
Yeah, yeah. But Utah. They scored. I mean, they must have scored. It must have been 5 very normal touchdowns. And Utah must have scored 4 very normal touchdowns of its own. What's your problem? Mm. And relatively even distribution of scoring, right? Half to half. Like, this wasn't something ridiculous like Utah didn't score in the second half, right? Or that like Washington's vaunted offense was held to like 11 in the second half?
Yeah.
Oh, was it? Is that exactly what it was?
There's a lot of zeros in the second half. Yeah.
Oh, but like certainly there wasn't a situation where like, I don't know, a defender returns a turnover all the way nearly to the end zone, but then drops it at the one. That didn't happen, right? I think a Kalen Clay thing, like, 10 years later?
It actually might have happened exactly like that. We were in the car. Driving,
but certainly no Utah player had the awareness, the presence of mind to then do a live recovery of the football within the place of the course of the play, right?
I think that
certainly Washington, if that did happen, was set up on the one with a chance to go in for the touchdown, right?
No. No.
Oh.
We were in the car, and Connor loves betting sports, you know, so we're driving to Autzen, and he's giving me updates, and he's like, oh, interception, all these, and he's like literally giving me like the Brett Musburger, like the 40, the 30, the 20, and then they're like, and he did for the touchdown, and Connor's like, wait a second, I think he might have dropped the ball too early or something. And I'm like, wait, what's going on here? And then so you're getting like these updates from, I'm driving, I'm getting these updates from the back seat about like, oh, wait, I'm like, wait, did, but Washington jumped on the ball, like exactly like you said, right? Well, he dropped it too early, but it went out of bounds. Did they get the ball at the two or the one? Like, no, like Utah got the ball.
And the funny thing was he dropped it super early. It wasn't like he dropped it at the goal line. It was, he dropped it at like the two. It was bad, like super bad. And obvious to see live, and so bad that it was like, did he know the number? Like, did he not want, did he have Utah?
That could have been.
Yeah, like, it was so bad, man.
Because you're covering,
obviously. Yeah, you're winning, who cares? But you want that money. Yeah, I mean, look, I thought Utah played well. I thought they played really well.
They played better than I thought they
would. I thought, like, offensively, again, a coaching staff that tried to eke out every possible little ounce of talent they could from a very, very depleted roster, went in there and they played an excellent first half, and then it all kind of fell apart in the second half. Bryson Barnes, it was kind of a weird, wet and windy-ish day. His throws started to be way off in the second half. He threw a couple of picks. He was really good in the first half, though. And they were doing some PI stuff with Vele. Sanivaki had another big long run after the catch, and you know they were doing enough. Washington really turned off the water in the second half defensively, by turning on the water, something. I don't know. I was going with something there. And then
I don't know where you're going.
Yeah, who knows? Dylan Johnson was really good again for Washington. Their receiving core was really good. Roma Dunze's stud, Jack Westover, did his usual thing. But it was just a very, very funny end of game. And the best part, Ryan, is that I predicted this game exactly.
The exact score?
It's the second week in a row I've predicted Washington's score exactly.
Right.
52-42 last week, 35-28 this week, and it went exactly the way I thought it would.
With the, the pick six?
Yes.
Dropped at the goal line.
And then making up for it. Did they make up for it with a safety?
They did get a safety right after that. I think the first play, they get the safety. And it was like, okay, so you like you have a shot. Like when you're trying to cover a spread, like those are the things, like missed extra points, you know, not getting a touchdown wipe off the board because you drop the ball. I mean, you don't score touchdowns very often if you're a defensive player.
Well, and
I would be holding that thing just like, you know.
It was
like,
so beautiful because then Washington could have scored. They could have had a field goal late.
Yeah, you texted me. So I already knew that the bad thing happened.
But
I
Phoenix knew that, Phoenix takes this horrible sack. Drops him 9 yards back from the Utah 6 to like the 15 or something.
Yeah.
And it was just enough that he had to flatten the field goal attempt and it gets like semi-blocked and he misses it.
He like kicked it in the back of the lineman's head or something.
It was so good.
But there was like, so you text me that and they're like, oh, that's a bad one for you. And I didn't even realize what that was. But again, two like 95%ers or one of them was a 99.9%er to cover the spread and they miss them both. Like the odds of that happening aren't very good. But that's the sort of the way my betting thing has gone. So, but that was kind of.
Can we just tell everyone my overall record against the spread right now?
It's really freaking good. You went 5-1 2 weeks.
I'm 44-25-1.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's insane. And like some of them like this, like you're like, what? Like that should have happened.
I just have a gift, man.
But it did. That one definitely, that was a weird one. I mean, it was to the point where I was getting texts from people like, did you see that weird Washington play? Like that are like mediocre, like college football fans. Like they were seeing this, like what? He dropped the ball. Like that's the kind of shit that was going on. So 10-0 for Washington. First time since 91. You remember what happened that year. This is the second time in program history they started 10-0. Caleb DeBoer got his 100th career victory as head coach, so pretty cool. Roma Dunze, the first Husky to have back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons since Reggie Williams back in 2002-2003. So cool stuff there. Utah had a couple turnovers. Washington outgained them by 80 yards or whatever. You know, not much from DeQuincy Jackson. Barnes was okay. I mean, there's just, it was just sort of like fine, but it felt like Washington had this one. Utah couldn't do anything in the second half. So impressed with Washington's defense, like kind of stepping up, especially they gave up 21 points in the second quarter. I was like, what the hell's going on? Yeah, I don't know, but big game. Another big win for Washington. They haven't always looked the part. Like, we've seen Oregon kind of look the part more, but they are 10-0, and they have the head-to-head against Oregon. So they are in the driver's seat right now, and not much is going to change, I don't think. I mean, they got tough games, right? You got to
– yep.
Washington State, you know, I don't think it's going to be that tough, but they showed signs of life at least. But going to – Corvallis this weekend is going to be a big one. So,
yep.
All right. So those are our games. Why don't we take a quick break and we will come back and answer your questions. So back in a minute.
Do you want to know what we finished last year as?
What did we finish last year?
I was 56-40-2, which is pretty good.
That's
and you
really
were
good.
52-44-2, which is pretty good.
We both had good, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, this year you're doing great. Like, especially the last 2 weeks going 5-1, 5-1. I mean, I get the first one down. I'm like, all right, we had four picks different. This is going to be great. And then the second one looks like I'm going to cover that one. Doesn't happen. And it's just, it kept looking like that the whole way. I'm like, damn it. But
it was
yeah,
a beautiful day.
That was bad.
It was a beautiful day.
It's a long trip. Like, you forget, like, you haven't been up to Oregon for a while, probably, right? Like, If you can fly into Eugene, it's fine. But, like, you got to go to Portland and then 2 hour drive or longer on game day. I like it's got the, Austin's got the feel of, like Allegiant Stadium where you're really high up. It's sort of like a, you know, it's very steep.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of keeps a lot of the noise in and everything. The media relate, like, we had to pick up the parking pass in person, which kind of sucked. So it's like, how do you pick it up? If you were there on Friday, you could pick it up. I'm like, hey, I'm not going to be there until Saturday. So that was a little bit of pain in the ass, but everything else was good. Food was pretty good. Nice people there. A lot of Oregon people, like a lot of staffers are in that press box, like working stuff and everything.
Right.
You're like, hey, you don't care.
Nope.
You don't go to games. So
yeah, don't care.
Okay. We got a voicemail. You want to start with that?
Sure.
Okay.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. Just curious to know, Dave, given how the result went with UCLA this weekend and just kind of how the overall season has gone, I was curious to get your thoughts on whether you think there's really any path for, I guess, a bad enough defeat versus USC that would cause UCLA to move on. From Chip Kelly. And then also I wanted to give a shout out to the Zodiac Killer a while back. He considered me a Cal fan for reasons I still don't understand, but with that being said, I've adopted it, and I just want to say, Zodiac Killer, we're ready to go for the Apple Cup this weekend versus Stanford. Justin Wilcox is probably one of the best defensive head coaches in the Pac-12 among Northern California schools. He's got these boys playing hot. They're ready to go. So good luck, pal.
Perk, I love your calls. One thing I would never, ever do is, like, call out the Zodiac Killer and say, hey, I'm a Cal fan. Like, no. I would have to, like, every time I start my car, I'd be worried if something's going to happen. I'd be looking in the back seat, lock my doors more. Like, that's the last thing I want to do is, like, announce myself as a Cal fan to the Zodiac Killer.
Yeah, he'll decipher who you are. As to your question, I don't think it's going to require a big loss to USC.
It doesn't matter. He's going to get an extension no matter what.
Yeah, obviously he gets an extension no matter
extra
what.
Extra gloves.
I mean, they're like on track. I mean, they can't take that win away. They're on track for a bowl game, baby. You can't take bowl games away. You can't take those
post-season,
for granted either.
Baby.
That's postseason football. Yeah.
I mean, not a lot of teams.
Do you know he is 33-33 at UCLA? He has won 33 games. He has won half of his games. Do you know how hard that is to do?
That's like a coin flip. That's crazy.
Winning as much as you lose?
There are 133 FBS teams. Only like 84 of them go to bowl games. So you're in the upper three quarters of FBS. hard.
Do you know if you don't count FCS schools, he's 31 and 33?
You kind of went off on Twitter a little bit.
Have I? You think?
Do they get mad? Like, are you already blocked by USC football? I mean, UCLA football.
UCLA football unblocked me like minutes after that happened several years ago.
Oh, okay. I thought you were. I tell people.
No. That was for clowning on their graphic designer, which was kind of mean. I shouldn't have done that. I think I don't do it until it's. I don't know. I mean, maybe they should like get after me a little bit about it, but I don't really hear anything from them about it. I can just clown pretty hard. I think the way I treat my job is like I show up and I, you know, put my face in front of Chip Kelly and I ask him questions. So, you know, I'm not doing anything that I don't show my face for. And I'm not doing anything different than what like a columnist would do, right? Like, you know, it's talking shit about the local coaches is kind of what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, I guess that happens.
Yeah.
Do you want to start? I think, is it Hank the first one?
Let's see. Yes.
All right.
Is this text message first?
No, I think we did the text message last week.
All right. Game day. What should a Beaver fan make of the game day snub? Nothing against JMU, but a top 10 matchup between the Beavers and Huskies in Corvallis. Are you kidding me? Anyways, 19 runs in a row. Go Beavs.
Yeah, that's disappointing. But I get the James Madison thing and the fact that they can't, like, they could easily be the group of five representative. My sister's not a big college football fan. Like, she went to the University of San Diego. Sometimes she would drive up to USC on weekends and go to games. But, you know, she lives on the East Coast, doesn't really go to college football, but they went to that latest James Madison game, which is kind of funny. It's a kind of a big national story, and the fact that they're not going to be allowed to participate in a bowl game, and they could be going to a New Year's Six bowl game because they could be the best team in the group of five. So I get it. But I think I'd rather see, you know, Jonathan Smith, Michael Penix, like all that stuff. I think I'd rather see all that.
Yeah, DJU, of course you would. The hell? No, nobody cares about JMU.
Come on, JMU, baby.
The NCAA doesn't care enough about JMU to even let them do a postseason.
What is this 19 runs in a row? Is that a prediction?
No, or what was that's what Oregon State.
Tell me.
I don't know, man.
Michigan ran it 30 times in a row against Penn State. They had one pass that was like a PI, so that didn't count. But that was like no Harbaugh. You're the like interim head coach. You're like, I'm gonna show my head coach that I love him, and I'm just gonna run the ball 30 times in a row. Yeah, 19 runs in a row.
I got a few questions in the chat. Chris asks, is there a UCLA coaching hire that would get Dave to a game at the Rose Bowl? The answer is, of course, no. Under no circumstances will I be going to the Rose Bowl.
Okay.
Yet another Duck fan. Dave, are they waiting until December when his buyout drops, making the money move when it doesn't make any competitive sense? No. No. I don't think that's going to be a significant factor.
Okay. Dave going to the chat, so I have to like scramble to find where those are.
Just reading some stuff.
I know. I put them up there on the screen. Okay.
I mean, you were talking about JMU or something on our Pac-12 podcast, so I had to find something else to do.
There you go. This is from Amy. Looking good doing it. Oregon looked especially good in their uniforms this week. Oregon's uniforms were sharp, bright, crisp, and smart compared to the dull, same old uniforms worn by the Trojans or many other college football teams outside of Utah, of course. Question, does Nike design these uniforms as part of their contract, or is it Oregon that sends the designs to Nike and they make what they are told? Random question, I know, but you are my source of information for all things college football, and if you don't know the answer, it will only prove how, quote, mediocre this podcast really is. David, I loved your pig farmer shirt. Go Utes, from Amy.
I did. I got a that's my pig farmer shirt.
You did?
Yeah.
You tweeted it. I saw it.
Yeah. I did. I don't know if it's in their contract. I imagine it is. But also, I think, you know, Nike would be glad to do it because Phil Knight is the benefactor for Oregon football.
I think that's sort of like the plan. As far as like designs go, I don't know for sure, but I think it's a kind of a, you know, Nike comes up with a lot of cool stuff. But I think if Oregon has an idea for something, I think they could just tell, hey, we want to make this. They're like, okay, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But thank you for that one, Amy.
Pick the over under two. This is from Jay in New York. Pick the over under two going forward to give Ryan a chance. Pick the over under two for going forward to give Ryan a chance.
So we talked about our picks. Yeah.
No, yeah. Why should we change? He's the one who sucks.
Yeah. And I don't suck. You're just scorching the earth with especially super lucky.
Absolutely
stuff.
True.
Super, absolutely super true. Fucking lucky stuff.
Absolutely true.
All right. This is also Jay in New York. What a fun weekend of Pac-12 football. I'm in my feelings.
I'm sad.
I'm in my feelings a bit knowing.
The lingo of the children these days.
Is that what they're saying?
I don't think so.
Okay. A bit knowing that the Pac-12 is only a few weeks from its demise, just when the conference is finding its footing and getting really fun. Sad stuff. What is happening? Anyways, I wanted your opinion on behind the scenes of Cam Rising's injury and how it was handled. Rumor has it that Cam's agent misled and purposely kept Utah coaches and team doctors in the dark about the extent of Cam's injury in order to secure NIL money for this year, as it doesn't make much sense to give a bag to a guy who won't play all year. I'm not sure I totally buy this, but it's weird that Utah didn't go after a transfer quarterback when Cam had a knee injury in January. The coaches and team doctors could not have both, one, known it was a tear of multiple ligaments, and two, expected he could realistically be back by August or September. Whether true or not, do you see more of that in the future, players being vague about whether they'll be ready to secure NIL money? I don't think it will be common, but I can see it happening, and don't blame the players either. It's the Wild West.
I don't know. This whole thing's super weird, but I think it's a kind of a unique one-off situation that I don't think will have much application going forward for many guys.
Yeah.
I would have to imagine for Cam, he would rather play than not. I imagine it's a relatively serious injury that has kept him from coming back. Now, the deception part of it, I don't know how true that is. Yeah. I don't know if there's going to be any potential legal attempts to, I don't know, do something with the money. But it's kind of a unique situation. You get a catastrophic injury to one of your star players who's entitled to a certain amount of NIL money or whatever. And the thing is, this gets into the weird part, which is the pay-for-play aspect of NIL that's not supposed to be but actually is de facto what NIL has turned into versus the marketing thing. Because for the marketing thing, Cam Rising's value didn't actually change that much this year. He's still, you know, the potential starting quarterback going forward for Utah. But for the pay-for-play aspect, which isn't supposed to be the big factor but actually is the factor, he didn't play. So it becomes that whole weird thing. This is where it would help to have all of this above board, and instead of, you know, having it be pay for play, but it's NIL, have it be pay for play where they literally are paid a salary and you have like injury insurance for it and all that kind of crap.
Yeah, I think the fact that he was brought out to Pac-12 Media Day, I think Utah team doctors would still look at Cam Rising. I don't buy this. I would think that you would know something. If it was all those tears, I can't imagine that this was like an agent saying, we're only going to have our doctors look at Cam. It just doesn't pass the smell test for me. Maybe it happened. I felt this was more like Whittingham sort of being, I didn't like the fact that he didn't play all year, Keefe didn't play all year, and they were your two representatives of Pac-12 Media Day. That still sits wrong with me. But if Utah didn't know about either of the extent of their injuries and they just thought that they were going to be back, I mean, that's saying something too. Like, I want my doctors to be able to look at them too. It's like, okay, well, we can still, you can share the x-rays or the MRIs or whatever. Like, even if you're going to use your own doctor, like, I would think that all that stuff would have been happening, but maybe not. I don't know. But
yeah.
We had Eric in the chat, who's a Duck fan, said, I put up a couple of the comments on the screen, that Oregon, that Nike sends stuff to Oregon. And he said that they go on four-year cycles, so they'll get new uniforms every 4 years. And he said, so these uniforms are still under Mario Manboob's, his tenure. So they're from that. So they'll, I think next year they'll get some new ones.
Mm.
Yeah. But
all right. This is from Paul Webfoot. Wazoo and UCLA. I think this is our next one, isn't it? Yeah.
It is, yes.
Greetings, champions. Two questions, one for Dave and one for either of you. First, Dave, putting aside your dreams and your broken spirit, what percentage chance would you give Chip Kelly to still be coaching UCLA in 2024?
Like 85% or whatever?
I don't know. I don't want to. 5%.
Whoa!
Yeah.
So you're essentially saying he's not coming back.
I'd be surprised.
This is like when you said that Colorado was leaving.
No, no, I'm not breaking news on this podcast. 5%.
Hold on. So, according to David Woods, of the podcast 5%.
Champion,
not confident that Chip Kelly, even if he gets a blowout win against hated rival, UCLA brings the victory bell back to Westwood or Pasadena. I don't know where they keep it because they play in different places than they live. But whatever it is, David Wood's saying it's not going to matter. He's not coming
5%.
Back. 5%. Breaking news.
5%.
Okay.
5%. Mm-hmm. And either of you, what the hell happened to Wazoo? I don't follow them closely, but I haven't heard anything. I haven't heard about major injuries or coordinators leaving or anything. Why did they suddenly collapse after the Oregon game?
No, they got broken by UCLA.
UCLA broke them. How are you not listening to our show, Paul Webfoot?
When I first called that, I'm like, it was like a week later. I'm like, UCLA broke this team, and you're like, well, maybe, but it's been that.
Yeah.
Now they got bet. Like they looked better against a bad Cal team.
Yeah, but they've lost six straight, and it started with UCLA. They beat Oregon State, and then UCLA showed how to defend them because they could. I don't even think it was like something innovative UCLA did. They just were like, hey, we can probably get through that offensive line with three or four. And then that showed the formula for everyone to do that to this offense. And maybe they finally figured some stuff out against Cal. We'll see. But that's what happened. I think it was a schematic thing that they have not been able to adjust against.
Yeah. They definitely got broke. LFG says, the person sending the question is not aware. If you're not aware, starting in 2024, the Big Ten college football teams are going to be required to furnish advanced weekly injury reports similar to the NFL. Mm. So we might see a little bit more of that going on where you can't just, but I mean, in this case, you could just say like Cam Rising knee questionable, you know, and he could say he'd be questionable for the whole damn season to the point where like, nope, he's out.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then also because I'm a hater, I can't wait to hear what y'all think about Oregon State being favored over Washington, but I can wait for the preview show for that. And you will, Paul.
Wait for the
because we've got
show.
2 minutes to get through the rest of this because I got to go.
Okay, Brian says David has been on a. This is, I'm supposed to read this. David has been on a Twitter spree, saying UCLA needs to fire Chip Kelly. However, has he thought of this? UCLA beat Stanford 42-7 in Palo Alto. Fifth-ranked Washington only beat that same juggernaut by 9. Clearly, Chip is far ahead of the curve compared to the media hyped Kalen DeBoer in Washington when it comes to game planning. And defense. Maybe Chip just needs an extension and to hire some new assistants. May I suggest newly available ex-Big Ten Coach of the Year and leader of men, Brady Hoke. With this addition, UCLA will for sure continue to stay above the 50% win rate, which is all you can ask at a softball school that doesn't even have money for gloves.
Thank you.
That's like a David Woods level troll.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Like, did you really like good. Those when you get those back at you?
I do. I actually do. I'm appreciated.
You're like, oh my God, this is what I sound like to other people. And yeah. Man, no, that makes me mad.
It's so good. all right, and last one from Jared. Question about coach hirings, firings, and retirings in celebration of the beginning of coach hiring and firing season. Let's play a game called Hired, Fired, Retired. I'll give you the names of three coaches, and I'd like you to decide who is most likely to get hired away to another coaching job, who is most likely to get fired, and who you could see staying in their current role until they decide to retire or at least will be there for a good while. You can only choose one coach to be hired, fired, or retired from each group. So, for example, if I gave you this group, Kyle Whittingham, Dan Lanning, Chip Kelly, you would probably say, as a young upcoming coach, Lanning gets hired away. Since the game has clearly passed him by, Whittingham gets fired, leaving Kelly as the obvious choice to stay as the head of UCLA until he has a bronze statue erected in his honor to commemorate his prestigious career and finally retires. Okay, your turn. Who gets hired, fired, or retired from the year one coaches? Deion Sanders, Kenny Dillingham, Troy Taylor.
Okay. So you hire someone somewhere else. Or was it is a hire staying there?
Hired away.
Okay.
Fired, or they retire there.
Retire there. Okay, gotcha. All right.
Kenny Dillingham, retire at ASU.
I think he retires at ASU.
Deion Sanders, hired. Troy Taylor, fired.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Now the 2-year coaches, Lincoln Riley, Kalen DeBoer, Dan Lanning. Dan Lanning hired. Kalen DeBoer retired. Lincoln Riley fired.
You think Kalen DeBoer will stay there?
I think of the likelihoods here. Lincoln Riley's not retiring at USC.
Yeah, I don't.
Nor is Dan Lanning retiring at Oregon.
Yeah, Dan Lanning's going to go somewhere. Okay, I think that's fair. Okay. You could go Kalen. Yeah, I think. I mean, he could be hired away tomorrow, but I feel like he's got the best shot to be there for a little while.
Yeah, I think he's found a fit. I think he's a fit there. And finally, the quote tenured coaches: Jonathan Smith, Justin Wilcox, Jed Fish.
Okay,
Justin Wilcox fired like a gun. And then I think for the other two, it's Jed Fish hired, Jonathan Smith retired, but it could go either way.
I think I would
easily
swap those.
Yeah, I mean, I think they both, in all honesty, get hired away. But
I think because Smith doesn't have a conference, that he's most likely to be hired.
All right, we got to get going.
All right. So one more thing I want to do for the next 10 minutes or so. No, you got to go.
Oh.
David Woods, he's right there.
I'm here.
What do you want to pose as for your thing? Perfect. So if you listen on the podcast, we just smiled. Dummingly, or is that a word? Into
I don't
the
know what
camera.
That was.
I'm not sure what it is. That is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. We'll be back later this week. I'm not going spearfishing or anything, so we will preview week 12 action of Pac-12 football, where all the point totals will be doubled so I can catch up to David. That's David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.